and welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. A crazy weekend in Charlottesville, and here we are reacting yet again on the Who's On podcast. I got some great guests lined up today, but we're going to start off things with the former UVA quarterback, ACC Player of the Year, color analyst on the Virginia Sports Radio Network, Matt Schaub. Matt is back again. Had you on last season, and here we go again after what it was a wild weekend in Charlottesville, man. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Preston. Thanks for having me on, and good to be back on the show and talking to all the Wahoo faithful out there.
Yeah. Just walk me through those final moments there. I listened back to, you know, what John Freeman had put out there and listened on a little bit more after that. It had to be kind of surreal seeing that kind of environment and just what happened there.
Oh man, it sure was. There were so many things. It was hard to take it all in, right? Because you're focused on the action and what's taking place, the situation, you know, being able to relay that to the listeners on the radio network and still try to take in the moment. Because as we know, over the course of history, these type of games and especially victories have been few and far between. But I did tell John, it's funny you brought John Freeman up. I told him as this thing was transpiring, I said, man, there's going to be like 15 to 20 of your calls throughout this game pending a victory that are going to live on for decades to come. Like, compartmentalize that a little bit. But, you know, it was just such a cool atmosphere. And I was curious how it was going to turn out before the game when I showed up and, you know, driving in into the parking lot and getting there about 4:30, 5 o'clock, about 2 hours before kickoff. I was like, I don't see many people outside the gates. Like, usually there's some excitement, some energy. It was kind of flat and early right before the kickoff. It was like fans took a while to get juiced up and into the stadium. But, man, when they did, it was such a cool atmosphere. I mean, it brought back memories to days gone by. But, I mean, the fans really brought it. The environment was electric. And a lot of that was the play on the field, right? And yeah, you know, the way the guys were playing, the way they were making plays in critical moments, and you knew a game against Florida State, it's going to go back and forth. We jumped out onto a lead, we got a few turnovers, got them to get some dumb penalties, everything was on our side, and then you know what, they made a couple plays, and that's okay, that's football. And what I love to see from our football team was that mental toughness that they were going to overcome any type of, you know, bad things that happened to them, any type of plays that Florida State makes. You got to have a short-term memory, move on, and no greater example than the quarterback. And when your quarterback can do that, man, it's easy for the rest of the team to do that. And you really saw each other, each side of the ball feed off one another. What a great football game. And as those closing moments, going back to your original question, I know I'm long-winded here, but those final moments, it just seemed like it was destined to be us to win, right? Like, yeah, they battled back. Yeah, they found a way to tie it. But when they dropped that pass, you know, their quarterback threw a perfect ball to their number one receiver, and he bobbled it and then dropped, and it was incomplete. I was like, we're going to win this game. However this shakes out, we're going to find a way to win. And such a cool thing to watch.
You mentioned the fans. I'll start there. Yeah, I was the same, you know, and it was weird because it's a Friday night. And so some of the parking lots didn't open until kind of later in the day. So you didn't get like that full buildup, really, because before I got there super early because I was worried a little bit about traffic coming in for this game. So I kind of took a walk from the media parking lot just to kind of kill some time. And yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of people out there. Like, there's a little like, you know, soft buzz out there. But yeah, by the time I mean, got through the first quarter, like especially the Hill, the student section, like they were locked in.
They were.
And they've been great all season. I know some people complain, oh, they left early a couple games. But when Virginia's been blowing people out at home by like 20, 30 points, like, yeah, I guess I can see it. I would prefer to be on that side than the other side.
But no doubt about it.
Yeah, but yeah, I think the fans were tremendous. And kind of my benchmark going into it was, can they get to 50,000? They got to 50,000. That was kind of the benchmark because it's only been done a couple times. I feel like people think back to 2019 when they played Florida State or Virginia Tech, and they're like, oh, well, those were sellouts. They weren't. They you know, got over 50,000 fans those games too. It's hard these days, and I think it's going to be harder, but it gets easier once you get wins like this.
Well, totally right. And you know, I know Tony Elliott mentioned this, but this is the type of game you want to have become common. You want to get to the point where your program is playing in these games. And honestly, you want to get to the point where your program is the team that is in the top 10, in the top 15, that's ranked, that you're getting circled on everyone else's schedule, right? And you got the bullseye on you. That's where you want to get to as a program. But you have to work to get there, and you have to win games like this to get there. And so it's a big step in this era of Virginia football. After the last few years, there's been so many ups and downs and trials and tribulations, but the way the coaching staff has battled, and frankly, the players, the way they rallied around. I mean, it's widely reported how many transfers we got this year and how many first-year players. That's one thing that I think gets overlooked unless you've been in the mix and played. But like X's and O's and what go on the field are one thing. But the way when you can come together as a team, when you have to piece it together year after year, such as college football these days, when you can come together as a team and bond and have that togetherness and that brotherhood, that adds to, the win-loss column. That is profound, and it sometimes gets overlooked, but in the game of football, that is half the battle.
And it comes off as cliche sometimes, but truly being around this team and looking at past teams I've been around, this is one of the closer teams that I've been around. And it's wild to think that they had 50 plus new players that came into
Right.
this team, and they've kind of gelled really quickly. I know, and a big part of that is due to the returning guys. I think, especially on the offensive line, so many of those guys were like, "Yes, come in. Like, we need the help. We need to get better." Like, it was a big part of that. And I look at Jason Hammond, a defensive tackle, was
Right.
out there recruiting guys in the offseason to come compete with him for positions, like guys like Hunter Osborne and so on. So it's been a big collective as a program to kind of get to this point. Went back and listened to some of the broadcasts, and kind of before the game, your thing was, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for a statement win at home. So to quote your fellow color analyst, who I think screamed this about 50 times into the microphone after the game, Ahmad Hawkins, "Do you believe in the Hoos now?"
Yes, I mean you sounded just like Hawk right there, but he did. But that was the big thing was, and me and him talking and John before the game off the air and just trying to figure out our notes and what we had written down. So obviously we don't say the same thing, but it all came back to initially going into the game opportunity. What a great opportunity it is at home on a Friday night. I know the throwbacks, the paying homage to the 95 team and all these things, all these stars were aligned, right? But then you got to go out and you got to execute and you got to play the game. But we knew we had the pieces to have a great game and to go back and forth with the likes of Florida State. And honestly, other than the Alabama game, yeah, they put up a lot of points and a lot of offense, but there wasn't much competition on their schedule leading into our game. And for them, I mentioned this to the guys. I was like, it'll be interesting to see how Florida State comes out in this game because they have Miami now this week, but going into our game against them, the next game is Miami. Are they going to be looking past the Hoos and come out kind of flat? And we saw them. I think they got a little shocked in that first quarter. Now we gave them some help to get back in the game, but our guys battled and we saw what we have. And it's something that we knew because we've played, likes of, NC State and we had some other good competition, but our team has been fairly consistent offensively and defensively this season. So it was a good measuring stick to go against the number eight team in the country. And our guys lived up to the challenge. And I mean, that's just, we have some veterans that have come in that have played a lot of college football, maybe not at Virginia, but at other places. So they're not foreign to the game and being out there and under the lights in the heat of battle. So, but at the same time, it's just another game. Yeah, it's against Florida State, but these guys treated it like it was another game, another check mark on the schedule. And man, it was so fun to be a part of.
I almost worry a little bit they didn't enjoy it enough afterwards, because so many of them were like, "It's just one, we're 1-0, go moving on to next week." I'm like, "Well, guys, you got Friday and Saturday. You got a little extra runway here."
Well, let's just say that's good. They're taking good advice from their coach. That's Tony Elliott. He has the right focus and the right mindset. And that's what you have to have in football. And he's been through it enough. I mean, his lineage from Clemson and they won a lot of football games there. So you win big football games, you got to enjoy it. And I'm sure the guys did, but they're saying the right things because the guys have the right perspective that we're going to enjoy this. But at the same time, this is one piece of the puzzle. And it means nothing if you go this week to Louisville and you don't take care of business. You want to go and put an exclamation point on this Florida State win by going into a hostile environment like Papa John's Stadium and go down there and beat Louisville. Like that's what you want to do. And then go into your bye week at 5-1, and then everything's right in front of you. It means nothing if you don't take care of business the following week. And I think that's the right perspective from the leadership, from obviously Tony Elliott, and the guys are buying into it. And that's important.
Yeah, like Tony Elliott said after the game, like you wanted to be in the driver's seat. Now you're in the driver's seat, and kind of, how do you go from here? Yeah, it would be kind of the perfect exclamation point to go into Louisville this week. We'll talk about that game in a second, but and then the bye week right after that, and then after Louisville, they're favored in every game from here on out. At this point, so a lot of opportunities left out there for this team. Real quick, just I was kind of. I try not to get too caught up in it, so I took some time to think about it afterwards. This is by far the best home game I think I've witnessed as a Virginia covering Virginia. Is there any other games that come to your mind that you've either witnessed or watched or it was because it was just the back and forth between the two teams. Like these are two really good football teams.
I mean, it was an instant classic, right? This is one that's going to be, you put on any given weekday now on ESPN Classic or whatever the channel is, affiliate of ESPN, and they have these old football games, right? This is an instant classic, not just from the score and it went to double overtime, but it was the subtle things that happened within the game that made it the back and forth nature, whether it was the turnovers or the long drives, that sustained, or the comeback, or, the defense was out there and it was a quick drive and they're gassed. And the offense, we just said on air, like, we need to put a drive together. And what do? They put together a 7-minute, like 16 play drive and get a touchdown. We weren't settling for field goals. Then at the end, like, just the plays that were being made. I mean, it was more than just a football game that was like, who's going to have the ball last is going to win. This had so many things happen within it that it was drama and must see TV. And I mean, if I can be biased, if I'm going to compare it to a game, I mean, I don't have one where the excitement level was so high throughout because of the drama. But to me, I mean, our Virginia Tech win in 2003 at home, I mean, that was pretty exciting. I know there's been other games since then. Obviously, you might reference to 2019. I know the 2005 FSU game at home with Marcus Hagans, had a stellar performance. That was another one. I mean,
I think
but
his
that's the
name in that
thing.
game was the was Dagum number 18, though.
Oh yeah, that was Bobby Bowden saying that. And yeah, exactly. I mean, I said the same thing about him for a couple of years because every time I gave him the football, he made a daggone play. But that's the thing is when we talk about these years, they're too far apart. We got to have these type of games, and not we don't need the drama that this one had, but the outcome. We need these type of outcomes, more frequently. And I think that we're seeing that come to fruition.
And you need to build off of it too. Yeah, it can't be just a one-off. Like they won at number 10 UNC a couple of years ago, but that was kind of the only signature moment of that season. You kind of need to like build it now. And that's I've talked about this a couple times. Like under Bronco, it kind of felt like they're taking those steps and it kind of culminated in the Orange Bowl, but then, COVID and, kind of all that and then Bronco leaving, like kind of the momentum got lost somewhere in that shuffle, and so they kind of need this to continue building up here. You mentioned though, like instant classic. I think ACC Network's already played it two or three times since Friday night. I think they recognize that. Like, let's just get this game rolling out here. But the plays in this game, like Pavard's first interception, not even to mention his game sealing interception, Chandler Morris, the touchdown run, Jamari Taylor's touchdown run. There's so many like plays that people will be talking about for years.
Yeah, I think if you look at it, given it was a Friday night, what was the actual viewership? What were people doing? Not necessarily they're affiliated with Florida State and Virginia because those people were tuned in, but the great majority of just football fans might not have been tuning in, just thinking the Florida State's going to win or whatever. But then when you wake up Saturday and you find out, whoa, what was this? I was smart by AC Network to replay it because I'm sure they got a ton of people very interested in what transpired in the game. And you mentioned some of those plays. I mean, the Jamari Taylor run before half. I mean, what a big play that was to at least get us back. I think at that point it made it 21-21. It was huge for us given like the couple of turnovers that we had, and Florida State had had the momentum. But We thought he was all tackle, and I think everyone on the field did too, and
Yeah.
in the stadium. And all of a sudden, he pops out and scores. I mean, that was just dynamic. And I think that was the key to this game going into it. And I think I said it in one of my keys was we have to be able to run the football. And how is that going to transpire? Because we have been averaging going into 250 yards a game, but Florida State was only giving up 75 yards in each game that they played.
Yeah.
Who's going to win that battle? And we had some changes on the offensive line, right? Right guard to center. We had to fill in at right guard. Like, how is this going to hold up against the front? Well, we found out in a hurry, and we were able to run the football even in the second half when they knew we were going to run the football because it was widely seen Chandler had hit his hand on a helmet early in the third quarter, and that was affecting his ability to really just throw it around the field for the complement of the second half. But we leaned on the run game, and we were able to just gash them. And I think that was testament to the offensive line. That game was really won in the trenches. As much as, I'm a skill guy, I'm a quarterback, and I want to give accolades to the quarterback and running backs, but the offensive line is what drives the game, and they dominated the other day, and it was so fun to watch for them. Those guys were so jacked up. Anyone
Yeah,
that
they
was paying
were.
attention saw that they knew what was at stake with what they had in front of them, and they responded in a big way.
You mentioned just having that Friday night stage, the viewership and everything. They got 4.4 million viewers. It peaked at 6.9, and it's the most watched ESPN Friday night game on record outside of the Black Friday holiday games. So, people were watching it at a national level. That's why it's been talked about so much throughout the weekend. You know, it wasn't being covered up by, you know, the Alabama Georgia game or, you know, Penn State
Right.
Oregon. It had its own stage out there. You're a quarterback. Right. I want to talk about a quarterback in Chandler Morris. Yeah, he's ACC leading 14 total touchdowns right now, 10th nationally in total QBR. You could, you know, say the stats all day, but what has he shown you this season as a quarterback? You've seen him a couple times in person now. I'm sure you've watched some tape. Just what does he show you as a quarterback?
Yeah, first and foremost, what stands out is his grit and his toughness. Because he's not afraid to pull it down and run it. And he gets hit, he gets knocked around, but he gets back up and he's going to keep swinging. And you can tell he's played the game. He can throw it around. He makes good decisions. He processes things, understands pre-snap where the ball should go, given coverage and what the defense has given him. And he throws it accurately. And I love his demeanor and his leadership in the huddle and at the line of scrimmage, but just his grit and his toughness and his willingness to lead the guys. And when you're unflappable in the face of adversity, and there's been some tough times. I mean, we could be sitting here 5-0, right? The end of the NC State game is first down inside the 10, and I know he wants that play back, but he bounced back the next week. And since then, he had moments in this game on two series in particular where there's some unfortunate turnovers and some poor decisions on his part. And he would tell you that. But what does he do? He just bounces back and just keeps playing. A lot of guys would go in the tank and just it would turn into a Florida State blowout. But no, he stepped up and he just said, give me the ball, coach. I'm gonna give me a pass the next play. Let's go. Let's keep rolling. And credit Des Kitchens for just continuing to dial him up for him and for him believing in himself. And you can see his teammates believed in him. So what he's doing on a day-to-day basis is working because he's providing the belief in the huddle. And so Chandler's really shown a lot. And what's great is the recognition is well deserved, both by the organization, the team, and the program, but also the individual recognitions. And I think the more you win, they're going to keep piling on and just keep producing and just going out and just doing your job.
I gotta ask, which play are you getting more grief from a coach? Running out of bounds for a sack or that first interception he threw down the field?
Probably the first interception. Now, there's a cardinal rule. You don't run out of bounds because the offensive line coach, I think more than the head coach, is going to be mad at you because the offensive line, they're going to give up a sack. They want a legit sack. They don't want to be credited for one that they didn't really impact, although he did get flushed out. But you don't want to run out of bounds behind the line. I think it was only 1.5 yards,
It was
maybe
like 2
max 2 yards
yards, yeah.
yards. But so I'm going to say if it was like a 5 yard loss, yeah, I would say that. But the interception's probably because you had control at that time, right? Like you're up, you're dominating, you got all the momentum, and then you just felt like the wind got taken out of the sails. The first one was tough. I thought the second one was worse, that interception, but and I might be getting them confused, but definitely the interception.
The first one was when he was trying to point his receiver downfield on the scramble drill, and threw it into
Oh,
coverage.
The towards down their
second one,
sideline.
yeah, the second
Yeah.
one, he was kind of more towards the UVA sideline. He was, I think Trell Harris is open behind Jamal Edrin, but Edrin jumped up to try to catch it, and it kind of tipped up, and a guy caught it.
Yeah, the first one is the one I was thinking
Yeah.
about. You know, that one you're flushed out. It's first down. Both of them were, those first two were on first down. And I think
Yeah.
that's the thing we got to look at. Understand the situation with Chandler. And I know he's being coached that. Just throw it away. Live for another down. You're trying to make a play, but just throw that one out of bounds.
Yeah.
The second one, I get it. You got a big receiver. You're trying to put it up high for him. It was a little late. That was my concern on that one. He was a little late with the throw, and then you give the guys a time to recover. But you know, all for naught because it's a victory. You chalk those up to learning
Yeah.
experiences, and it's easier to coach through those things after a win, right? So I know they've talked about him, and Chandler understands that, so he'll get those corrected.
Yeah, I talked to his dad, Chad Morris, on Saturday, and he was like, obviously he's been an offensive coordinator for a long time, head coach and everything, but he was like, yeah, like you just got to throw that ball away.
Yeah.
Looking at, you mentioned the NC State play where he threw the interception there. They called that same wheel route in this game, and he threw a perfect ball to Xavier Brown there for the go-ahead
Yep.
touchdown. Have you had a moment like that where you come back to a play where maybe earlier in the season or earlier in the game where you didn't have the best throw, and what's it like kind of revisiting that play?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a staple play in so many playbooks, not only in college but in the NFL. And the thing about the NC State one, he got flushed out to his right towards that side, and he was a little late. So it happened to where when he threw it, the defender was already matched on the back.
Yeah.
And I think if you would looked at it, I was just remembering the replay. He probably wished he would have thrown it to the outside to maybe back shoulder of the back. And if it's incomplete, if he misses, he misses, right? It's incomplete. It's first down. Threw it on the inside while the linebacker was already recovered. But that concept, you see it all the time. But you run that wheel route. It's kind of a wheel, but it's just like a wide that turns into a down the sideline throw. And the good thing about this one against Florida State is it was man-to-man coverage. They
Yeah.
had like a blitz look. The guy on the edge was covering Xavier Brown, and he just got past him. And it's more of an easy read for a quarterback when you know you have man, because it's one-on-one and you can just lay the ball out there for your guy. And he made a perfect throw right in the breadbasket. And Xavier Brown shown he has good hands that he's able to make that play. But that's all part of the mesh concept where you run shallow crosses underneath of that, where the most important thing is to diagnose man or zone before the snap. So then you know if you have that throw to the running back. And if you don't, if you have zone, he's really clearing and lifting coverage down the sideline for a shallow cross coming right in behind. And if it is man and he's not open, then you throw the shallow cross man to man because he's got a, I'm going to say the word, we don't want to say it, but it's a pick. And you're not really picking the guy, you're trying to get a rub for that shallow cross so you can knock off his man to man coverage. So then you have a big play. Now, if it's zone, and that's what we got a lot lately because people know third down and less than six, you're going to run these crossers thinking man to man. So people do play zone. Now that shallow cross has to understand that void in the zone coverage, and the quarterback's got to get it to him in a timely manner so he doesn't get blown up by a defender playing zone. But that's where that running back on that wheel route can lift that coverage to create that space for the shallow cross.
I'm glad you brought up this whole mesh concept because I think Virginia fans are becoming well educated in it because it seems to be an unstoppable play for this offense this year. Anytime they go to it, I know there's, versus zone or versus man, there's different looks and stuff like that. Sometimes the receiver can break it off in the middle there. Sometimes they just keep going across the formation. Just how has that play been so successful for Virginia?
Well, it gives you a lot of options, right? And that's the thing, starting with the man zone that we just talked about. So you either have the running back or you don't. And if you don't, what you're building on the inside, and if anyone wants to go back and look at film, you can, you build a triangle. You have two shallow crosses, one's low, one's high. The high one's kind of making a rub for the lower shallow cross, right? And they're aiming for the hash marks. And then you have another guy who's running we call it the top of the teepee or top of the triangle. You're going right over the ball at about 8 to 10 yards. And so those hook players, those hook defenders, usually linebackers that are sitting on the hashes or just inside the hashes, you're trying to pry them apart and they're trying to figure out who should I cover. So if they want to dive down on the shallow crosses, well, you have that guy right in the middle of the field at about 8 to 10 yards who we've seen us hit. Now, if they don't and they want to sit there in zone, then you're going to hit one of those shallow crosses either in a dead spot or they're going to sit down versus zone and stop their route near the hashes. So it's an all coverage beater, and it's one that the more you rep, they've gotten hundreds of reps of this play, both from the spring and the summer, the more comfortable you feel. So when you get in those tough situations in games, you go to what you do best. And this is a play that Chandler Morris sees really well, and his receivers understand what they're trying to do versus the coverages and the recognition at the snap of the football. They know what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. Last thing on Morris, real quick. The thing that's impressed me the most about him is his footwork in the pocket. And we talk about, the offensive line's only allowed, just a few handful of sacks this season, but it really seems like a big part of that is Morris isn't letting himself get pressured that much. Like he moves so well and instinctually in the pocket.
He does, and that's been something over the last few years. You've seen the numbers. It's been a problem for us is the amount of sacks, especially on third down, that prevent extending drives. And Chandler's experience playing in previous places in his career, I think, helped out a lot. But his ability to process before the snap, he knows where the football's supposed to go, and a lot of the times he's getting it out and he's getting it to his playmakers. When it's not there, he has a really good understanding and feel in the pocket of where the pressure is coming from or where he's getting rushed. So he steps up when he has to. And when he does that, he steps up, still looking to throw, but he understands when to escape and go. And he has the ability to accelerate through the line of scrimmage to get positive yards. He also, when the pocket collapses, you've seen him, he can flush right and he can also flush left. So he's not a one-way guy when it comes to escaping the pocket. And I think his athleticism has shown and really gotten us out of some tough spots because there were a lot of opportunities over the last month and a half where guys could have taken sacks, but he's been able to escape and still make plays.
A bigger question here is, what's changed this year for UVA, but specifically with this offense? It's I kind of put out here a general question. It's the most points they've scored through 5 games since 1990 at UVA. They're fifth nationally in total yards. There's so many other stats, but this is the best UVA offense since, and I'll leave it open-ended for you.
Well, yeah, I mean, to compare it, I wouldn't know because I haven't really looked at the numbers from past teams. I know the Bryce Perkins era and even the Brennan Armstrong era, there were some pretty prolific offenses with as far as
Yeah.
numbers are concerned. But what's changed? I just think consistency overall. We're not hurting ourselves with a ton of turnovers, a ton of penalties, sacks, a lot of those negative plays. Those hurt those stats in a big way. But when health of players and consistency of players, I think, is the number one thing. And guys are being called into action, and they're playing their roles beautifully. Trell Harris is making his big plays down the football field. Cam Ross, what a great addition, both in the return game but in the pass game, being able to make people miss. And our backs are just doing a heck of a job. It all starts up front, like I said earlier. But
Yeah.
I think Chandler Morris with the skill guys, you can tell their communication throughout the week and their preparation. They're on the same page. And that goes back to you bring all these different pieces in, put them together. I mean, Cam Ross is new. Chandler Morris is new. You got Jamari Taylor's new. You got so many pieces. Edrin's new. But they come in and you can tell the work they put in and they're just clicking. I think Des Kitching's in a zone right now. But it comes down to the players executing, right? And they're doing a phenomenal job, and they're getting the most squeeze out of the orange right now. And so we just need to keep that going and keep our eyes on the prize, and we'll be in good shape.
Defensively, they've gotten some flack this year just because, the points and yards allowed. I kind of came away from the Florida State game and, you could read off the 518 yards and the, 38 points that they allowed. And I kind of said, I don't care because I thought they made some really big, like momentum changing type plays in this game. And I thought the defensive line was really good. From what you saw in that Florida State game, does it kind of do you see maybe some upward momentum with this defense week over week?
Without a doubt. I mean, that offense was putting up 700 yards and like 70 points. I know against other competition the previous weeks, but they handled Alabama week one pretty good. And the one thing that jumped out at me was the second half run defense. We really, really locked down Florida State's run game. Other than the quarterback in the second half, there wasn't much there for them to get, and they had to rely on the pass game and our coverage. We were able to disguise things, we were able to confuse them, and we kept them in the pocket for the most part. You know, whether it was bringing five or just not being so quick to try to just rush a gap, but we're going to fence him in and not let him go create, which is his game. Our guys did a great job, and especially against a Gus Malzahn offense that likes to go so fast. You know, we were wholesale subbing defensive lines and mixing it up, so they couldn't get a beat on when we had our pass rush defensive line versus our run defense defensive line. But regardless of who was in, they were able to execute, and they put pressure on Castellanos enough to where he had to get the ball out of react, and he couldn't sit there and wait for receivers down the field. But a team like that, they're going to make plays. You're not going to be able to just totally shut them down to no yardage and shut them out with 0 points. They're going to make plays, but our guys were so timely in their sacks, in the turnovers, no bigger than that first interception by Pavard when he came off the edge and batted it to himself. I mean, that they had all the momentum going back down the field to get back into the football game. But when he made that play, man, that was such a boost to the sideline, to the team, because you could just feel like, oh, here we go. Florida State's back on the attack. They were running it right down the field on us. But the guys just made huge plays in big moments.
Yeah, Cam Robinson's getting back to full health. Jason Prefard made some big plays. I think Dan Rickard's becoming a cult favorite there. Just the energy he brings off the edge. But it looks like it's improving, and it'll be interesting to see kind of what they do this week in Kentucky. And speaking of which, UVA 6.5 point underdogs on the road at Louisville. We've talked about it, a couple times throughout this. How do you follow up, one of the program's best wins in a long time? Prediction time. What do you think happens this week in Louisville? How does Virginia kind of continue the momentum?
I think just that. I think my prediction is they continue it. They're going to go out and play well. I think the key was that it was a Friday night game. You mentioned it earlier they have Friday night, Saturday. Sometimes when it's on Saturday, you get Sunday to enjoy it. Guys watch NFL, they kind of recover, and then you're right back to work. Well, I think they had that extra day to process and as Tony Elliott says it, flush the game, which I totally agree. Let's move on. Let's get And by the time Sunday afternoon rolls, yeah, guys they remember it. They've watched the film, but now we're on to the next one. And I think they're gonna have the right mindset. I don't see a letdown. I don't see them coming in flat. They're gonna come out strong. They're gonna want to put that exclamation point on the Florida State win this week against Louisville. And they already had one tough road game that they fell short against NC State. So let's draw on that experience and how to go on the road and play effectively and play well and come out with a victory instead of falling short. And I think that's going to be the big thing is handling the environment, handling a road game, and being able to travel. We've shown we can defend our home field, and that's vitally important. But let's go on the road against a good team in a tough place, and let's come out victors. And so there's going to be a lot on this game, and I think the players, they definitely understand that.
And I think that was part of why I mentioned earlier they were so quick to switch their mindset. I mean, I think there's a realization, all right, it's only week five. Like we gotta keep going. And I think Louisville before the season, most people would have said was the toughest game on the schedule because it was on the road, and this Louisville team looked pretty good. They're undefeated so far. They had a close game against Pittsburgh this past weekend on the road. But they're a good football team. They're well coached with Coach Brohm there. So it's gonna be a challenge down there. But I'll lean with you and I'll say they continue the momentum. I'll give it like 30, 31, 28 or something like that. I think it'll be close.
Well, if we're going scores, if that's the prediction you're looking for, and I was falling short, if you're going, I honestly, I think we're going to win this one going away. I'm going to say we're going to win 41-27,
Okay.
comfortably. We're going to be taking a knee in the fourth quarter and coming on home.
On the ledge prediction there, taking a knee in the fourth quarter. I like it. Matt, I appreciate you coming on. You're going to be back in Charlottesville after the bye week for Washington State.
I will.
So looking forward to seeing you around Charlottesville again and throughout the year. Got a couple more games left here, but until then, man, enjoy it.
I appreciate it, Preston. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that's going to do it for the Who's On podcast this week. Appreciate you for joining us today. Remember to follow, like, subscribe on YouTube, our new YouTube page on Who's On podcast. Also, Apple, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast, you can always find us there. Leave a 5-star review as well if you like what Matt had to say today. If you don't, don't blame me. But that'll do it for the Who's On podcast. We'll see you later.